There we go. This chapter, the book of John, really hits the nail right on the head of what I consider to be the main message of the book of the gospel, the concept of the grace of God. The title of this message this morning is going to be, I know it's kind of a weird title, but bear with me. The relationship between sin and blindness. The relationship. What is the relationship between sin and blindness? Many of you may have had problems with your eyesight. I remember a few years back attending a soccer game at SU with a friend of mine that I've known him for years, and he was asking something about, you know, the score or the time or something. I said, well, the scoreboard's right there. Don't you see? And he says, I can't see that far. I'm going, what? His eyes were getting old. And I found myself now looking at things and going, oh, man, I don't know if I can. I used to be able to make things out. Blindness is a really debilitating major problem for many people, especially if they once had their sight and then lost it. You know how much you've lost. But how about someone who was born blind? You know, the issue about why some people have so many struggles in life and other people don't is something that philosophers, theologians, men on the street, everybody has had a hard time dealing with. And there is no simple answer, in my opinion. However, I do know this. Some people simplify things quite a bit by saying it's their fault. They brought it on themselves. Turn to John chapter 9, starting with verse 1. John chapter 9, verse 1 says, as he went along, this is Jesus, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, that he was born blind? I want to stop right there. The assumption that his disciples had, and I think this is an assumption many of us have, when something terrible happens to someone, somebody's got to be at fault. Somebody sinned. Maybe it's his parents did something bad when they were little children, and God said, you know what? You're going to get it. I'm going to punish you by giving you a son who's blind. Or the man himself was just an evil man, and God punished him before he even did it. Whatever it was. So the assumption, I think this is something that many people have. Suffering happens because people bring it on themselves. Their own sin is the reason for their suffering. That was the assumption his disciples had. They were trying to grapple with this. And let's look, so that's the first relationship we have between sin and blindness. Some people say, blindness, you're blind because of sin. Bam! Now who is it? Who sinned? Let's look at who to blame here. Verse 3, neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus. The next question I would have had in my mind, and many people have in their minds when it comes to suffering is, why then? Why? And Jesus gives an explanation. But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no man can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. So Jesus gives an explanation as to why this man was born blind. I don't know that every person who's born blind, God is done that way because of what's going to happen next in this chapter. We do know what happened with this guy next, and it really was a testimony to God's power. Sometimes the explanation is still unknown. And I don't know if Jesus was giving an explanation for all people who were born blind. But he was giving an explanation as to why this man was born blind. Notice what Jesus said here. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Now, let me ask you this. To someone who is blind, how is it helpful to turn the light on in a room? To a person who is blind, and all of a sudden the room is filled with light, what difference does that make? Not much, right? While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. Light only makes a difference to people who can see. While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. Remember this, because it comes in later on in this chapter. Verse 6, after saying this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with his saliva, put it on the man's eyes, and said, "Go," he told him, "wash in the pool of Siloam." The word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. I want to point out some things here. Jesus could have said, "Oh, blind man, see." Bam! And he could have had his sight immediately. While everybody was watching, while his disciples were right there, he just told his disciples, this man was born blind so that God's works could be shown. But he didn't. He didn't heal him immediately, completely, in the moment. He did something very strange that I do not understand. And I am suspicious of anybody who does have an explanation. Any explanation I've heard as to why Jesus did this, to me, doesn't make any sense at all. But that's me. Jesus spit in the ground, made mud, and put it on his eyes. What? I don't know what that was about. Except now the man had something to wash off. And Jesus said, "Go to the pool of Siloam and wash it off." Now, you notice this doesn't say his disciple followed him there to see if he did it or not. It doesn't say if Jesus followed him there to see if he did it or not. It doesn't say anybody even observed him going to the pool of Siloam and actually doing what Jesus told him to do. We don't know. Maybe someone did. Maybe someone didn't. It's not mentioned here. I kind of suspect that maybe he just kind of went off and he's blind, so somehow, however, he usually got around, maybe knew the streets well enough that he could feel his way around and get to where he was going. But I do know when he washed the mud from his eyes, he came home seeing. His neighbors, and verse 8, His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, "Isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg?" Some claimed that he was. Others said, "No, he only looks like him." But he himself said, insisted, "I am the man. Yeah, I was born blind. I'm the same guy you've seen around here for all my life." "How then were your eyes opened?" they asked. He replied, "The man they called Jesus made some mud and put it in my eyes. He told me to go to the pool, go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed. Then I could see." I want to stop right there again. Another interesting thing. How did he know that Jesus was the one who did this? How did he know his name was Jesus? Jesus didn't announce himself, didn't introduce himself. All we know is that Jesus was walking along with his disciples having a discussion, and all of a sudden his disciple asked, "Jesus, why is this man born blind?" I'm kind of thinking he sort of overheard some of the conversation and deduced that this was this man that he had heard a lot about, that had been going around and had disciples, and somehow he put two and two together that this was Jesus. That's all we know about the relationship of this blind man and Jesus. That's all there was. He just sort of knew that this was Jesus, and that Jesus put mud on his eyes and told him to go to Siloam and wash. And when he did that, bam, he could see. You notice something missing here? Any mention whatsoever of this man having faith in Jesus. We don't know if he believed Jesus was Messiah or not. We don't know if he even admired anything about Jesus. We don't know. All we know is that Jesus put mud on his eyes and said, "Go to the pool, go to Siloam and wash." And he did it. I don't even know why he did it. Except maybe a vague hope that something here might work. And perhaps he didn't have anything else to do with his day. "Where is this man?" Verse 12, they asked him. "I don't know," he said. So, verse 13, they brought to the Pharisees the man who had been born blind. Let me stop there. Why on earth would they bring this guy to the Pharisees? Why? Maybe they wanted some explanation. It was amazing to them that this man who had been born blind now could see. And he's attributing this to Jesus, and everyone's confused. They do know, as it mentions later on in this chapter, that the Pharisees had decided anybody who claimed Jesus was the Messiah was going to get kicked out of the synagogue. We know that. And so his neighbors were curious. They said, "Well, you know, we got to find out what is this?" Pharisees, they're the religious experts. They're the people who are knowledge. Let's bring this man to him so we can get an answer for ourselves, because it's just so confusing. Now, verse 14, on the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Let me stop there again. You remember earlier in the book of John, Jesus healed another person on the Sabbath. And the Pharisees and everybody else had difficulties with that. Because healing people is something doctors do for their job. So healing equals work for doctors. Healing must equal work for Jesus too. Therefore, Jesus was working on the Sabbath. Therefore, he wasn't keeping the Sabbath. Therefore, we'll see what that means later on here. It was the Sabbath that Jesus did this. Was that work or was it not work? Let me go back to earlier in this chapter, what Jesus himself said. But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed on him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Jesus wasn't trying to do the lawyer thing, sorry, Brian, of, well, this wasn't technically work because of this and that, and, you know, parse the law to. Jesus was saying, yeah, this is the works of him who sent me. Verse 15, therefore the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He put mud on my eyes, the man replied, and I washed and now I see. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath. Very, very clear to the Pharisees. Sabbath, we know the law. It says, do not work. Fourth commandment, one of the 10 big ones. Do not, it says, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Work all the other 6 days, but not the Sabbath. We know that. We know that doctors' job is to heal people. We know that. We know that Jesus was healing people on the Sabbath. We know that. Therefore, Jesus was not keeping the Sabbath. Therefore, he's not from God. Very, very airtight logic. This is what we know. He's not from God. He does not keep the Sabbath. But some people, that didn't quite make enough sense. But others asked, how can a sinner perform such signs? So they were divided. Let me stop right there again. Relationship between blindness and sin. The assumption that some were making here is you cannot heal a person of blindness if you're a sinner. Sinners don't heal other people. Do you see that? So that is another assumption that some were making. You cannot be healed, or you cannot heal somebody if you're a sinner. Does the Bible say that? I don't remember anywhere where it says that. Maybe some people do get healed, even if it's a sinner working with them. Anyone know any doctors who are definitely sinners? Anybody? There are a few. And sometimes they heal people. Now, it's not miraculously from God, but that's their job. They heal, and they're sinners. Sometimes proud of it. So that's another relationship with blindness that some people make, is sinners cannot heal blindness. So Jesus couldn't be, it's not as simple as saying Jesus is not from God, because how can someone who's not from God heal someone? So they're divided. Verse 17, they turned again to the blind man. What do you have to say about him? It was your eyes that were opened. The man replied, he's a prophet. I want to stop here again. Notice what he did not say. He did not say, I believe Jesus is the Messiah and he came to earth to heal and forgive my sins. Did he say that? He said he's a prophet. Let me ask you this. Can prophets forgive sins? Can prophets say, I am the light of the world. The blind man had heard Jesus say that from his own mouth. There could be several things we could take from that. Maybe this man did not really yet believe that Jesus was the Messiah, the Son of God, even though he had been healed. It's possible he did not yet even believe that Jesus was the Messiah. Another possibility is that he might either fully believe that Jesus was the Messiah or was considering the possibility but didn't want to admit it to the Pharisees. Maybe that's a possibility. All we know is that the only thing this blind man was willing to attest to his relationship with Jesus is that he believed Jesus was a prophet. That's all we know. Verse 18, they still did not believe that he had been born blind and received his sight until they sent for this man's parents. In other words, they think this must all be a hoax, elaborate hoax that Jesus had somehow conjured up to make himself look all that great. So they asked for this man's parents. And verse 19, is this your son? They asked. Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that he can see? You give an explanation, parents. What happened? We want to get to the bottom of this hoax. Verse 20, we know that he's our son, the parents answered, and we know he was born blind, but how he can see or who opened his eyes, ask him. That's all they're willing to say. We know he's born blind, we know he's our son. He's of age, he can speak for himself. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders who had already decided that anyone who acknowledged Jesus was the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. So they knew they were in a tough spot. If they in any way made it seem like Jesus healed him, and this was evidence that he was a Messiah, they knew they'd be kicked out of the synagogue. And that was too much of a price for them to pay. They said, speak to the son, he's one. He's old enough, he can speak for himself. Verse 24, a second time they summoned the man who had been born blind. Now they're just putting the screws on. Give glory to God by telling the truth. You're lying. You are lying. You're just plain lying. Something happened here that you're just not being truthful about. We know this man is a sinner. And so because Jesus is a sinner, that means the man is lying. You see the logic there? If he was born blind, we know this is his parents said this is the man, he was born blind and now he sees. And we know Jesus is a sinner, so what we don't know is how come he can see. But we do know that if he says that Jesus healed him, that's got to be a lie. That's got to be a lie. So, blind man, or tell the truth. We know you must be lying because we already know Jesus is a sinner. We already know that sinners can't heal the blind. I think this is the danger of what people in the counseling profession like me call black and white thinking. It's either all black or it's all white. This is where it has to lead you to. All people who don't obey the Sabbath the way we have studied the scriptures for years and found and done a lot of work deciding on what keeping the Sabbath is, all that we know black and white. This is keeping the Sabbath, this is not keeping the Sabbath. Bam, black, white. Jesus did not do that. Black, white, he's a sinner. Black, white, people who sin can't heal people. Black and white. Therefore, this man's got to be lying about how he sees. Black and white thinking can lead us to very dangerous conclusions. But this is where the Pharisees were at this point. Verse 25, he replied, whether he's a sinner or not, I do not know. Don't force me into committing one way or the other with this. I don't know if he's a sinner or not. One thing I do know, I was blind and now I see. That much I know. He's not even saying he knows that Jesus is the Messiah. He doesn't even know if Jesus is from God even. All he knows is once I was blind and now I can see. They asked him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? It can't be as simple as what you just told us. He put mud on his eyes, went to the pool of Siloam, washed, and now he saw. He'd already told him that. He answered, I've told you already, and you didn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Now, do you want to be his disciples too? This tells me something about this man. He's not afraid to. If you push him far enough, he's going to push back. He was tired of being grilled when he'd already said what he wanted to say. Anyone ever been investigated by the police? Don't raise your hands. Yeah. Sometimes police investigations can be like that. They know the information they want, and they will just grill and grill and grill and grill until you say what they want you to say. And that's what the Pharisees were doing with this man. And he just got tired of it, and he pushed back with a little bit of a jab. He knew one thing for sure. These Pharisees were not looking to be his disciples. But he put that little twist in there. Why are you keep asking me how this happened? You must really think Jesus is something special, huh? You ought to be his disciples, I know. Kind of a little twist. And so they responded in kind, verse 28, they hurled insults at him. You're going to insult me, I'm going to insult you back. And they said, you are this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from. So they hurled insults. To call this man a disciple of Jesus, in their mind, was an insult. One of the insults they were hurling at him, you're a disciple of Jesus. Ha! We know that's terrible because he's a sinner. But us, we are disciples of Moses. And notice he said, the Pharisees say, we don't even know where he comes from. You remember back a couple chapters ago, this was part of the discussion Jesus was having with the Pharisees. First they said, we don't know where Jesus comes from, and then later on in that chapter they say, well, we know no prophet can come out of Galilee. Well, they knew he's from Galilee. What do you mean you don't know where he's come from? So now they're back to, we don't know where he's come from. Verse 30, the man answered, now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know, now listen to this, we know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to godly people who does his will. Nobody ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man is not from God, he could do nothing. Now, I want to say, this man was not a theologian. And I think he was making some errors in his theology. Yes, he was healed by Jesus. But you know, verse 31, I would argue with this guy on what he said here. He said, we know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. You know, I think this is truly the attitude of many Christians. God doesn't listen to sinners. You want to know why your prayer's unanswered? Because you're sinning. There's sin in your life. I may have said this before. My mother died of cancer of the liver. That was the last stage in a series of cancers that she had. Started off thyroid, then went to her uterus. They removed her uterus. Then it went into her intestines, cancer there, and finally to her liver. And she died of cancer of the liver in her early 40s. One of the most cruel things, I think, that happened to her in the late stages of her illness was Christians coming to her saying, there's sin in your life. If you just believed hard enough and were obeying God hard enough, he would heal you from this. That, I believe, was one of the most cruel things that somebody could do. This is exactly what Job's friends did to him. There's sin in your life. Even this man who was just healed by Jesus, after his disciples asked him, where is this blindness coming from? Who's to blame for it? Where is the sin coming from? Jesus said, there is no connection here. Even this man was making a connection. That God does not listen to sinners. Man, if that is true, I am in big trouble. Because I'm a sinner. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Well, you know, let me do some more commentary on what this blind man or ex-blind man said. One of the people in the Old Testament that I have the hardest time with is Samson. Samson was a judge of Israel. Samson delivered Israel from oppression by the Philistines. There were times when he would defend Israel, killing many, many Philistines by the jawbone of an ass. Samson was a sinner. This guy was a womanizer. This man spent lots of his time in Philistine places looking out for heathen women. And that's actually what kind of ended up with him losing his strength when he finally told one of these women that he had been fraternized. This man was a sinner! And God was using him. I do not approve of Samson's sin. I think that was wrong. I think that was ungodly. And it is also true, God used him in powerful, powerful ways. This the blind man here was following what he had been told, that God does not listen to sinners, he listens only to godly persons who does his will. By the way, that was not Samson. Of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. I'm not so sure that's true either. To this they replied, the Pharisees replied, "You, blind man, were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us?" And they threw him out. Now, how did they know he was steeped in sin at birth? Probably because he was born blind. You are the sinner here. What are you doing lecturing us, upstanding, God-fearing people? We've had enough. Verse 35, Jesus heard that they had thrown him out, and when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And another trivia thing I want to stop right here and mention. Jesus is the only person I know of who referred to Jesus as the Son of Man. Do you know anybody else who called him the Son of Man? I don't. But Jesus, that was his most favorite name for himself, the Son of Man. Verse 36, "Who is he, sir?" the man asked. "Tell me that I may believe in him." Let me stop right there. This man is saying he had not yet believed in Jesus. Notice that? He'd been born blind. He'd been healed. He had stood before the Pharisees, testified of his healing, and he had not yet believed in Jesus. But now he's open to the possibility. Another thing, he didn't know who it was who was talking to him. Verse 37, Jesus said, "You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you." Then the man said, "Lord, I believe," and worshiped him. This man's belief, his faith in Jesus, came after his miraculous healing. Why do I make that point? I want to go back to what Christians have been telling my mother. You're not being healed because you don't believe hard enough. The belief has got to come first. And it's got to be wholeheartedly enough. My mother, been to Bible college. She spent her summers teaching Bible to kids throughout America. She married a man, my father, that they went to as missionaries to Jamaica. And while she was there, her husband went off the rails, started drinking, abandoned his faith, and she stayed there serving God, raising three young kids by herself, serving God to people that she knew. How cruel is it for people to say, you don't believe strong enough, otherwise God would heal you. This man had been healed even before he believed in Jesus. But, verse 38, the man said, Lord, I believed, and he worshiped him. Another piece of trivia, and I know I'm probably speaking too long, I apologize. This is a long chapter, and I'm really into this. Anyone ever talked with a Jehovah's Witness? One of the things about the Jehovah's Witnesses is that they insist Jesus is not God, he is the Son of God. And one of the things they will say, if you ask them, is that nobody ever worshiped Jesus as God. Let me read verse 38 again. Then the man said, Lord, I believe, and he worshiped him. Did Jesus correct him for this? Say, oh, you know, worship, you should only do that to God. You really shouldn't do it to me because I'm just a son of God. It's really inappropriate to worship anybody besides Jehovah. Jesus didn't correct him. In fact, Jesus said, verse 39, for judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see and those who see will become blind. I'm not a fan or avid follower of the Jerry Springer TV show. But one thing of the way it is set up that I've heard is they'll have just incredibly conflict, bizarre stuff happen. And at the end of the show, everyone knows what happens at the end of the show? Jerry Springer has his own thoughts, and he pronounces what he thinks this is all about and gives some summation of what we should take out of all of this. I think Jesus is doing a Jerry Springer here. He's saying, this has all happened, now let me give you my thoughts about what all this means. And this is what Jesus says. What all that just happened, Jesus said, for judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see and those who see will become blind. Jesus, we don't think of Jesus coming the first time to earth for the purpose of judgment. But Jesus said this is what he came for judgment. Who is he judging? Those who see will become blind. That's the judgment. So, from Jesus' statement, you fit one of two categories, don't you? Either blind people or sighted people. If you were blind, Jesus came so you could see. If you could see, He came to make you blind. So the Pharisees who were with him heard this and said, they knew one thing, they were not sinners. They knew they could see. So they knew Jesus was calling them blind. So they said, what, are we blind too? The very last verse of this chapter. And you're glad I'm done, aren't you? Jesus said, if you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. What is the relationship between blindness and sin? Jesus is saying it's exactly the opposite of what even this blind man himself thought. Blindness and sin used to be the traditional way of thinking. Blindness means you sin. Jesus is saying, if you're blind, then you're not guilty of sin. Do you see how incredibly astounding that statement is? And here's the other part. But now that you claim that you can see, your guilt remains. Was Jesus talking about their eyesight? They could have said, what on earth are you talking about? I can see you standing right here. What on earth? I want to remind you, at the very beginning of this chapter, when he was answering his disciples' questions about why this man was born blind, Jesus said, while I am in the world, I am the light of the world. The one thing the Pharisees could not see is that Jesus was the light of the world. So Jesus comes for judgment. If you're blind, you're not guilty of sin. If you claim you can see, your guilt remains. You know, you've heard me talk about how the system of grace works. Everyone who sins, those who sin receive the reward. Those who are righteous receive the punishment. If you claim you can see, your guilt remains. The only way to be free of guilt of sin from what Jesus just said is to call yourself blind, is to realize that you're blind. Man, that's a humiliating thing. This man had lived it physically. He knew what it was like to be blind. And he knew what it was like to stand in the presence of the light of the world. And he could see it. This reminds me so much of another thing Jesus said. I did not come to the world to save the righteous, but I came to save sinners. You want to be saved by Jesus? You got to be a sinner. You want to be sighted and see the light of the world? You got to be blind. Only those who recognize their own blindness, their own sinfulness, their own need, their own failures to live up to what God actually requires. Only those people can receive the grace of God. If you don't need that, you don't need the grace of God. And you're not going to get the grace of God. Jesus came to the world for sinners like me. The reason I think this is so important to us, and as I'm looking through our packed audience here, everyone who's here is a regular attender, and you've heard all of this so many times before. It is so easy for us, now that we have been saved, sanctified, and filled with the Holy Ghost, it is so easy for us to now see ourselves as those who are holy and those who are righteous. Because the righteousness of God in Christ does start to live through our lives. But I want to encourage you never to take credit for what is really Christ's righteousness. The Apostle Paul said, "My own righteousness is nothing more than filthy rags." Man, that's a hard thing to hold on to when we start seeing our lives and it really does look pretty righteous. I am so blessed by God. I have a home in a nice part of town, married to a wonderful woman, and through the whole pandemic, we were not suffering financially at all. In fact, I got bonus pay and all sorts of things. God has been so good to us. And a lot of why we have what we have is because our behavior has been righteous. You know, I don't go spending my money on drugs and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. It is so easy for me to think that I'm receiving these blessings because I am righteous. Oh man, that's so tempting. But Jesus did not come to the world to save the righteous. The only righteousness I have is the righteousness of God in Christ living through me. You blame him for whatever righteousness you see in me. I'm not to blame for that. It is Christ living in me that is the hope of glory. My only hope is that I am blind and therefore not guilty of my sin. Let me repeat the last verse here. Jesus said, if you are blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim to see, your guilt remains. Let's go to the Lord in prayer.